Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, welcome in everybody. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. The Jaguars got a divorce from their kicker yesterday. That's pretty good terms. No acrimony there, Jeff. It's not like Scobie needs to go looking for a new home and a new contract. At least he gets to keep the final year of a pretty lucrative deal by kicker standards. You were the first one that, to my knowledge, brought this up during the scrimmage.
Yeah, prior to scrimmage.
Right?
Yeah, prior to scrimmage.
Yeah, leading into that, saying there's a legitimate kicking competition here when, you know, we've gotten so used to Scobie being the guy that you assume anybody who comes in is a camp leg. Didn't turn out to be the case. Were you surprised, even though you knew it was competition, were you surprised after watching the preseason? And we're not there for every practice and every special teams rep that these guys are taking, but were you surprised that ultimately the decision was made in favor of Myers?
No. No, because if you ignored everything that Josh Scobie has accomplished, which is hard to do, but if you evaluated the competition from the first OTA until yesterday when the trade happened, Jason Myers was better. He was better in practice. He was more consistent in the games. And his leg is stronger, and he's younger. And then you could add to that cheaper, but cheaper doesn't really come into account when you're talking about the decision-making process with this, because they have plenty of cap room, you know, so it's not an issue whatsoever. But to me, Jason Myers outperformed Josh. He proved that he had a stronger, longer leg. And, you know, when you're building to the future, you know, much like last week we talked about the decision-making with Wisniewski and Bowanko, you know, to me, that's a coaching decision. You know, Dave Caldwell's not going to go into Gus's office and say, hey, look, I believe that so-and-so should be a starter. That's not his role. But when it comes to the kicking decision, that's a general manager decision, which the general manager has to be able to balance winning now and winning in the future. And so, to me, this is Dave Caldwell's decision. It was a very good decision. There's a window that you can trade players of that caliber, and it has to happen prior to the 53-man cut. Because if you don't, then all of a sudden, most teams will say, well, we're not going to give you that. Go ahead and make a decision. We're going to pick up the leftover. You know, so I think it was very smart by general manager Dave Caldwell to make the trade now to get something for one of them. And yes, it takes a lot of courage to make a decision like that. It's a very difficult decision because Josh Scobie has been in Jacksonville, you know, going on 12 years now. He completed 11 seasons. He's been very successful kicker. But, you know, you also have to remember, last year was not Josh Scobie's best year as a pro. It was probably his worst year. He had some of them that were blocked. He had some of them that were missed. And the trajectory at times was suffering, and it was coming out a little bit low. So I think it was the right decision to make. But it does. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage because, you know, a lot of this is being made on faith and a belief that this young man, Jason Myers, can handle the pressure. Because you know Josh Scobie can handle the pressure.
Well, he's done it, right. And that's the biggest question. And that will be the biggest source of fan consternation if it happens to come down to a 49-yarder to win the game against Carolina in week one. Myers doesn't deliver. Of course, we're going to hear this narrative over and over. It doesn't mean Scobie would have been guaranteed to make that kick either.
No, because Josh has been very successful at his plus 50-yard kicks. Now, if it comes down to, you know, 1 second on the clock and you need a field goal to win it, I feel a hell of a lot better with Jason Myers kicking it from 55-plus than I would Josh Scobie. You know, so that's something to think about because I've seen Jason Myers throughout OTAs and minicamps make them from 65.
Right.
Make them. And I'm not talking barely clearing the crossbar 65. I'm talking putting it in the net at 65.
Dave Caldwell said, we feel when we get to the 45 of the other team, we're in scoring position.
Absolutely.
Right there. And because you think about that, that's a 55 plus 8 on the snap. That's a 63-yarder. Mm-hmm. That's right under league record now. And they feel like we can go for it now. Once we hit that range, we're ready to score points. And, you know, if he can come through at that kind of clip, you can't expect him to hit 60-yarders all the time, even if you have the leg.
No, but you got a chance.
Right. Well, maybe the 40's a little bit more realistic, right? And then you're talking high, long 50s, and for him that may be a cakewalk with the leg that he's got. But one thing that Dave said, he really likes his demeanor. And he didn't – he seemed like he was pretty cool, didn't
very
get
calm,
rattled.
Yeah. Very collected. I don't know if you ever had a chance to talk with Jason, but he's very monotone.
Yeah.
You know, and it gives you the impression that not a whole lot of things rile you up or him rile him up. But, you know, I go back to, you know, my old compadre, Vic Ketchman, you know, used to have coaches say, I can see it in his eyes. Well, no, you can't see it in his eyes, you know, but at the same token, it makes you feel better that he does have a little bit of a calm demeanor about him.
Right.
He doesn't seem to be a guy that has any nervous energy. He seems low maintenance, you know, and that's what you want in a kicker. Josh was a little bit of the opposite. And I'm not trying to criticize Josh here because Josh was a tremendous player, but Josh was a little bit high maintenance. You know, he liked things a certain way, and I think, you know, the older you get, the more kind of in tune with a certain routine that you have to have just right. And that's something that I know that Josh actually, about four seasons ago, kind of went through a little bit of a training exercise to eliminate some of that from his game. Because he was so, everything has to be exactly perfect prior to the kick. And it was
a little OCD almost.
Yeah. And it was kind of bothered him a little bit. And he went and addressed that in one off season, felt like that he got great improvement from the time that he spent wherever it was that he went to, you know, but he still has a little bit of that in him, you know, which is okay. You know, the hole's got to be just right. Well, look, not everything is perfect. Just kick the ball, right?
Right.
Just kick the ball.
Right. Yeah. You have any choice whether it's perfect or not. You got to kick what's delivered to you.
Well, and I think that you get further kind of confirmation that, you know, you do have a decision to make that's not going to be an easy one when teams are calling not necessarily about Josh, but are calling about Jason Myers.
Right.
And when teams start doing that, it's very similar to last year when Dave and the Jaguars put out that Tyler Shatley was going to be released. Well, he wasn't officially released when that information was put out because they never had to re-sign him. Right.
Right.
Well, they kind of put it out there, and then all of a sudden...
To see what the buzz would be.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, teams were interested in Tyler Shatley, and they're like, well, maybe we ought to keep him.
Right.
And I think they still had a high opinion of Tyler Shatley. I don't think that changed the way that they thought about Tyler Shatley, but it changed the process of what we have to do to keep him.
Right.
You know, now Tyler Shatley, in my opinion, you know, Tyler Shatley is a guy right now that's your sixth offensive lineman.
Yeah, pretty valuable piece.
I think he's more valuable than Luke Bowanko.
And speaking of Bowanko, of course, the last time they traded off a veteran player for a sixth round pick, he became that sixth round pick, and that of course was Blaine Gabbert. So we'll find out a year from now what they do with the selection they got from Josh Scobie.
My guess, you know, in the past, from what Dave has done, is that the picks that he's acquired from trades
package them
have been used to move up. And so, because it's kind of a free pick, you know, so in the sixth round, I mean, what are you getting? I mean, look at this year's sixth round pick.
Right.
You know.
You look back now, do you wish his team had taken a chance on Lyle Collins at LSU at the time? The whole story was going on. I mean, absolutely, right? What would have been the harm of throwing a seventh round
pick? Well, especially now, I mean, hindsight's always 20/20, but with the season-ending injury to Josh Wells,
who I
said that was, you know, I think he's the most valuable backup on this football team because he's a swing tackle. And he's not just a swing tackle. I think that I would agree with Tony Boselli that eventually he has starting caliber potential. You know, you lose a guy like that, whereas if you were aggressive, and I don't think you could have competed with Jerry Jones, but Collins would have been a nice addition to this football team.
We will get into the fallout from those injuries. We'll get into what they do in the absence of Julius Thomas. Continue, obviously, with Clay Harbert and Mercedes Lewis being a bigger part of the offense. But we'll talk about the decision to have the surgery now that'll keep him out possibly for the first month of the season. We'll take plenty of your calls today. If you'd like to get on board with Jeff Logman, we give you that opportunity every Tuesday. 641-1010 is the phone number. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line if you'd like to weigh in that way. Fan Feedback Spotlight today asks you to put on your thinking caps and tell us, now with Josh Scobie out, which veteran could be the biggest surprise deadline cut when the Jags go from 75 to 53 players at the end of the week. Share your thoughts with us today. at MD_1010XL on Twitter, at Logs56, LOGS56, at 1010XL Tyler as well, and on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Phone lines open for business. Talking Jag football, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman. Jaguars Today on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com on 1010XL. 92.5 FM.
He's, to me, he's like the albino tiger at the zoo. You know, you're, if you get there and you're lucky enough to get him to come out of the cave and see him, you know, it's a good day. So I've only seen him three times, you know, since I've been here. And those 3 days, he was very impressive. But he's only been out 3 days. So we're hoping that we can get him healthy and see a little bit more of him.
He's back in his habitat right now. He's pacing back there. Marquise Lee, Jaguar wide receiver. We'd all like to see him out there. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Tony Smith not here, but he's with us in Twitter spirit.
Yeah, where's he at?
He is, here's the deal. His Braves did not show up at all for a three-game weekend series with the Yankees, so I told him, you don't need to show up for the next 3 days either, pal, if your team's going to play like that. Actually, he's just taking a few days off.
Good for him.
He'll be back on Thursday.
Good
ready
for
to
him.
Roll. Absolutely. Ready to roll. But he is following you in Twitter spirit. He's listening, as he put it, listening to you take me to school on Jaguars Day, which, excuse me, is usually deadly accurate on this program. Marquise Lee, Jeff, we talked about him a little bit in the top with Dan Hicken. There, the albino tiger, I think, has a chance to stick around. Fan base has taken to that one after yesterday's comments from Greg Olsen. But overall, the job that Olsen's done, from my vantage point, I don't know if it's him directly. I don't know if it's the maturation of some of these players on offense. I don't know if it's better protection from the line, giving Blake Bortles more time or all these things. But am I wrong that I'm seeing more guys running open in the secondary, on the second level, that intermediate level, and the deeper level of the defense, and Blake's having time to find these guys? I'm finding guys, running with the ball and catching it in stride more than we've seen in recent years. It just looks like there's so much more flow to the passing game right now.
I think the biggest thing is that there is a consistency with the passing game, whereas in years past under Jed Fish, you would have a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And then you'd play an opponent, and they would do something that would have success, and then Jed Fish would install it into his playbook. And when you have a young quarterback, there's no consistency. There's no repetitions of same plays to help him build a thought process and experience to help him improve within that scheme. And I think that hampered Blake Bortles tremendously last year. I think just the simple fact of getting an offensive coordinator that has a system that he believes in was the most important thing for Blake Bortles' progress. And I give Gus Bradley credit because Jed Fish, you know, is a friend of his. And sometimes you've got to make business decisions and friendship can't get in the way. And so I give him credit for parting ways with Jed Fish because, you know, back at the very beginning when Gus Bradley was hired, Greg Olsen was in the running. You know, he interviewed for this job and he didn't get it. And to be able to admit that you made a mistake, as the head coach did, and then to go back and say, let's do this over and let's do it right, and to hire Greg Olsen and also to allow Greg to bring in, you know, a couple guys that he's very familiar with, and then also for Gus to bring in, without ego, a guy who was the head coach and Doug Marrone from the Buffalo Bills and install him as your offensive line coach. I don't want to say it was genius, but it's incredibly smart. And it was something that Gus needed to do, and I give him credit for making those decisions to be able to allow this offense to take the next step. You also give credit to Dave Caldwell for saying, hey, look, you know, we committed to youth last year, but we can't continue to do that. We have to create competition for youth. Go out and you sign Wisniewski on a one-year deal. He wins the starting job. You go out and you sign a guy who had very few starts under his belt, but in the limited time that he played, I thought he outperformed Doug Free in Dallas, and that's Parnell. Jeremy Parnell. Yep. And Parnell, when you watch him on film, game in and game out, the guy is absolutely tremendous. And now you have also the experience factor with the remaining guys and Brandon Linder. Zane Beatles is playing better, although his game this past week was a step down from his first two. Luke Jokel is getting better. We'll get more to that later on.
We will get more to that later on. The entire offensive line, I talked about that with Dave Caldwell a little bit today, and we'll get to Luke specifically coming up here. Well, let's get to the phone lines right now for a moment or two. 641-1010, and let's get Jim get on board here, first caller of the day with Jeff Logman and Mike Dempsey here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, guys. Just real quick on the, this is along the lines of what you were just talking about. You know, I just want to ask Jeff if I'm reading too much into this, because it seems to me the Jags are a perfect case study in that it's not necessarily the playbook, it's the personnel. Because, you know, Greg Olsen was here before when they were rehired him, it was like, oh gosh, this is just, you know, nothing's going to be any different, it's going to be terrible and everything else. Yet we've seen this offense seem to actually gel and do well. And at the same time, I mean, you see, read the, you know, the articles about Derek Carr all upset is that, you know, they can't do, seem to do anything right in Oakland offensively once they get in the red zone, which is kind of what we were doing last year. So I guess my question is that, am I reading too much into this, that it's, that the offensive coordinator is truly better because of our personnel's better? Or, I mean, you mentioned it was somewhat scheme and somewhat the playbook, but I'm just, you know, just curious. When you see an offensive coordinator leave one place, and then the guy struggles and come, the guys come here, the guy comes here, and all of a sudden our offense looks totally different.
Well, I think I touched on that it's both. It is scheme, and that coaching does matter, and that also the Jimmys and Joes matter. I mean, there's no question. It's a combination of everything, and it's also has a lot to do with a young quarterback who has done everything possible that you could ever expect from the day the season ended last year until now. That's the most important thing, period. The development of Blake Bortles, and I said this to Frank before the game, and I said, you know, I think we're almost underestimating the development of Blake Bortles. And I think that, that Gus Bradley and them are tempering their enthusiasm a little bit, because you don't want to get overly excited and build up something that hasn't happened yet. Because you know what? In, right now, it's the preseason. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We're not counting yet. We're not counting the two columns that matter most. And I know Gus Bradley's world, that doesn't matter most, but in the real world, it does.
Sure.
You know, so I think that the quarterback is number one. But to allow a quarterback to develop, the consistency of a core system has to be in place, and now you have it.
Is Bortles where you thought he would be?
Way ahead of where you thought he would be. I mean, I just can't believe how much progress he's made. I mean, from his comfort in the pocket, which, look, when Blake Bortles walked on the field, and I'm a believer in this, some people are born with certain things. Blake Bortles was born with pocket presence. I think when he was a baby, he probably slid around in his mother's stomach to get the most comfortable position, because it was just something innate genetically that he's got.
That sounds weird.
Seriously, I mean, that's how good he is in the pocket. You compare him to some of the great quarterbacks in the past, and I'm just talking about just pocket presence now. He is unbelievable in the pocket at finding a comfort spot that he can execute a play. And that's something that you can't teach. You just can't teach it.
Yeah.
You know? So, his development in the offseason is the number one reason why this offense has looked so vastly improved, because if you look at the rushing statistics of the offense, yes, we're excited about what they've done on third and short, but they haven't been able to run the ball with great success yet in the preseason. I think that that will come. But the reason why they're moving the sticks is number five. Number five is dramatically better than what he was at last year. What is he, like number three in the National Football League in preseason rating?
Yeah.
And you'd like to say, well, you know, okay, well, typically you have guys that are in the top five because they're a veteran player that are playing against the threes and the fours at some point late in the ball game, and so the level of competition is not there. Blake has played against ones for the most part so far in the preseason, and he's executing.
By the way, I asked Caldwell that same question. Was he on par, ahead of? He said this is about where he expect him to be.
Well, and that's what you want to say. You don't want to say, wow, we never thought he
right.
could advance
because
this fast.
You took him as high as you did because you thought he would eventually
well,
get there.
Well, you did, but at the same token, there's no way in the world that Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell could have ever have thought that he is where he's at now and that they thought he would be where he's at. No way.
Then you're calling Dave Caldwell a liar because he told no, that's what he said. He told me that he thought this is about where he thought he would be.
Well, and he's saying that because he picked him, that high.
Understood, but maybe he picked him that high because, and he really did feel that.
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe, but I just don't see how you could have expected, because the first week that I ever saw Blake Bortles, you know what was on the tip of my lips? Bust.
Sure. He was throwing it sideways.
It was terrible.
Sideways. I understand.
It was terrible.
But as Dave Caldwell had said consistently since he drafted him, we felt that with another year of seasoning, he'd be the best guy of the lot going forward out of Winston, Mariota, all those guys that would be available. That was his belief. And I think part of that, what you're talking about, all that lack of being ready for prime time was a big factor in why they wanted him to sit as long as possible, at least last year, and not get
the greatest thing. And me and Gus Bradley actually had a conversation about this at one point, because you look in the past at quarterbacks that were pushed in the lineup early on, maybe before they were ready, and getting put in the lineup early, did that make them fail? Or would they have failed anyway if they'd waited 2 or 3 years? You know, and then gain more experience by sitting back and watching. I'm of the belief that, look, either a quarterback has the mental makeup and the will to succeed, no matter when, whether they're put in early or whether they're allowed to sit back and learn and develop over time. I'm a believer. It's whatever's going to happen, happens. I'm not a believer that you let a guy sit because he's not ready mentally to play and that he has bad experience and that impacts his life greatly for the rest of his career. I'm not a believer in that. I'm a believer in that he either has it or he doesn't. And to me, Blake Bortles has it. Now, to what level has it? We'll see.
641-1010. Let's get back to the lines. Dave, you're next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How we doing?
Good. What's up?
Hey, not too much, man. First of all, I'd like to extend a note of thanks out to Logs, man. Season ticket holders since day one. My son was 8 years old, man, at the inaugural games, and some of the memories that you and Brunell and the gang gave us, Logs, will never be forgotten. So a heartfelt thanks from an avid Jaguar fan. I'm now enjoying my first grandson. He'll be 2 this October, so we're going to be third-generation Jaguar.
Well, thank you, and congratulations to you, Granddad.
Absolutely. Now, with that being said, we're still, in my eyes, a very young NFL team. You talk about the NFL expansion and stuff. We're still going through, in my opinion, a lot of growing pains. And I shake my head sometimes with some of the decisions that are made on the corporate level of the Jags. Scobie, you know, I was speechless for a little while. But then you made a great point this morning, man. And it really makes sense to me, and it hit home. I guess my question to you is, you know, we're going to be at every single game. We're going to be screaming our heads off. Our day will come. Some of the dynasties out there, you know, the Packers and those guys, they went through some of the same things we're going through right now. I know our day will come, but to change gears a little bit, do you think you see any more NFL expansion in the future? And if so, how soon will that be? Again, Logs, love the memories, man. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. NFL expansion, do I see it? I don't see it anytime soon. I don't.
Not enough quarterbacks go around for 32 teams.
Well, it's not about the quarterbacks.
That's part of it.
It's about the game and the money.
Well, it's that, and it's. I mean, there's such a balance to the league right now with 8-14 divisions. There's a symmetry to it that, do you really want to throw that off when things are going as well as it's going?
You have great balance. You've got, you know, equal number of teams and divisions and conferences. And do you have other markets that are willing to sustain it? You know, when you have, it's always better for business when you have maybe a few more markets that can actually take an NFL franchise than the number of franchises that you truly have. Because then it creates demand. Demand
puts
is always
pressure
good.
On stadium improvements and all those kind of things that come with it.
Exactly. And then when you look at ownership, okay, you got 32 owners that are sharing the pie in 130 seconds. Okay. Is the franchise fee for expansion, is it going to be worth the less pie that you receive? You know, so
sure.
Most of people would say no.
All right, let's take a break here. Dave, thank you for the call. We got more on the line. We will get to you straight ahead. 641-1010. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates. Jeff Loggeman in studio with me. Mike Dempsey here with you at Everbank on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. This date in 1996, the Baltimore Ravens played their first game as the Baltimore Ravens after coming over from Cleveland. They beat the Oakland Raiders 17-14. That would go on to be a kind of familiar scoring range for them when they're at their best historically with the Ravens. Born on this date, some pretty good linebackers. Carl Mecklenburg, six-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro.
Great player.
Not a Hall of Famer. A lot of talk at the time, Jeff, I just called you Tony. Do you feel insulted?
No.
Okay, really?
No, I got great respect for Tony.
Excellent. Not Tony Smith. I was thinking Baselli when I called
Tony. Well, then, that number.
Yeah, all right. That's what I thought. All right. But I believe for the longest time, Denver only had one Hall of Famer, and it was Elway. And Mecklenburg, a lot of people said, should be the second. Floyd Little is now in the Hall of Fame from the Denver Broncos.
Shannon Sharpe.
Right. Few other guys, but Mecklenburg was always a guy brought up in conversation. Also,
he was so great because he could do so many things. And if you've ever talked to Carl Mecklenburg, he's one of the great conversations I've ever had. And met him many moons ago when he was a player rep. So soft-spoken and thoughtful. Incredibly impressive man.
He's 55 today, 50 years old today. Hardy Nickerson, probably his best football with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, five-time Pro Bowler with them and a two-time first-team All-Pro. Played here in Jacksonville for a couple of years at the tail end of his career. Also born on this date in 1973, Zach Thomas, seven Pro Bowls, five-time first-team All-Pro as
Hardhead,
well.
Hardhead, man, hardhead.
And 1986, Calais Campbell, 29 years old and a very good defensive line.
One of the best 3-4 defensive ends in the game.
I mean, other than Watt, who's better than Calais Campbell?
Not too many guys.
I mean, so big. He can really hold the point of attack, but he's really developed as a pass rusher at the NFL level.
Long, real long
like
player.
Like 6'8", something like that. And he's a massive guy, and of course, coming out of the University of Miami, he turns 29 years young today. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you need a family dentist, maybe you need a little cosmetic work done, maybe you want the custom fit Somnamed Stop Snoring Mouth Guard, visit them on Gate Parkway. Call 620-9225 or go to jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Well, guys, no word yet regarding Tom Brady and the never-ending Deflategate saga. It could be coming to an end soon. Yesterday, Judge Richard Berman said the settlement talks are over and also announced the decision could come as soon as today, tomorrow, but at the very least by Friday. Roger Goodell and Tom Brady were both in attendance for yesterday's session. Tim Jennings recently released the cornerback from the Chicago Bears, released from Chicago over the weekend, and today Jennings is in Tampa visiting the Bucks. He could be reunited with his former coach, Lovie Smith, who spent time with each other in Chicago. The Titans lost scout C.O. Brocato today after a bout with cancer. The 85-year-old Brocato spent 40 years with the Titans organization as a scout, originally joining the franchise in 1975. And finally, the number 3 overall pick in the 2012 draft has been released. You already know Trent Richardson was released yesterday. He lasts only 5 months in Oakland. He had signed a 2-year deal with the Oakland Raiders just 5 months ago that included $600,000 in guaranteed money. Richardson's still pretty young, only 25 years old, but three teams, Indy, Cleveland, and Oakland, have all given up on the former top pick.
And we were just looking this up earlier. Michael Haddix is the answer to the trivia question. Who is the only running back in league history since the merger with over 500 carries that has a worse yards per attempt than Trent Richardson?
I'd never even heard of that guy.
That would be Michael Haddix, who played probably 8 or 9 years, I'm guessing.
Who did he play for?
Michael Haddix sounds like the Seahawks, to me, if I recall correctly. I don't know. Let me look that up for you.
That's pretty bad when I can't remember his name. All right, so I got a quiz for you.
Yes,
you know, this date in football history. Mm. What is the date?
What is today's date? Today is, what is today? September 1st.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does September 1st mean, Mike Dempsey?
What does September 1st mean? It means it's
football
season.
It's got great significance.
It's your birthday.
No.
What is September 1st?
September 1st is typically the opening day of dove season around the country.
Oh, well, I thought that was obvious to everyone who was listening right now.
Yeah,
well, I thought that didn't need to be stated.
I just want to throw a little plug out here. Captain Kevin Favor is in Kansas right now for the opening day of dove season. I've already gotten multiple texts from him.
They have good dove in Kansas?
Absolutely. He's got a pile of birds already. It's awesome.
Yeah. Tell where, who has the best doves?
Well, South America.
Do they?
Oh my gosh.
I'll take your word for
South America, you can go down there and one of these days it's like one of my bucket list things is to go to South America and dove shoot to where they have dove clubs down there to where it's like, you know, thousands. Like literally you can be the 1,000 bird club, you know, 5,000 bird club. Now those are in one day.
Wow. In one day.
In one day.
What do you shoot? How many, you know, is single
you
shot?
You have a guy. Okay. You got a bird boy. Okay. And you have two or three shotguns going and he's just handing you the shotguns and then he's loading them up and you're just bang, bang, bang.
With 1,000 doves after you killed them?
Feed the village.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense then.
Much like the lion fed the village.
I would hope so. Michael Haddock's, by the way, Philadelphia mostly in Green Bay right at the tail end.
Philadelphia and Green Bay.
Yeah.
What years did he play?
83 through 90. So.
Same time that I was in the league, but I don't remember his name.
Yeah. Well, he didn't do much. He averaged 3 yards a carry.
Yeah, on his, probably why.
On his 543 carries for his career. That's a pretty impressive job. I'm guessing short yardage specialist a lot of the time. Zach Crockett was third on the list. I know he was a short yardage guy. Trent Richardson was supposed to do more than that.
Yeah, but I mean, boy, what a bad pick. And I'm not saying that, you know, Trent Richardson, who had a wonderful career, if you call it a career in college, but had a wonderful time at Alabama, mm-hmm. was a very productive back. But you just don't draft running backs that high unless it's a speed guy that has unbelievable potential like an Adrian Peterson type.
What about Gurley? Was that right for him? Too high for him?
Probably high. Pick? Probably high, especially for a guy that's coming off of an ACL.
He's got the speed.
You know, the bonehead award, though, and the whole Trent Richardson thing, I mean, look, I don't fault Trent Richardson, and look, he's given it everything he's got. He seems to be committed. He seems to work hard. But the general manager, Ryan Grigson, of the Indianapolis Colts, after having, you know, the tape to evaluate.
Like 2 year sample size.
And to still give up a number one pick, it's a good thing he picked Andrew Luck.
Right. And then about a year later to still insist it was a good move and they'd do it again if they had the opportunity.
Ridiculous.
Sometimes you just got to own your mistakes and move on. Yeah. Like you said, Andrew Luck is a great example, though, when you talk about, I'm not saying Blake Bortles is on that level. He's not there yet. But Indy, I don't think their roster, if you take Andrew Luck out, I don't think there's some special collection of talent.
No.
But they've been 11-11-11 in the win column all of his 3 years. Because of that guy. And I look at the way Blake Bortles plays here and that what you're talking about, the development of Blake Bortles, we all know it's the single most important storyline for this franchise, mm-hmm. not only this offseason, but it will continue to be.
It will always be.
As long as he's the quarterback, right? And
the quarterback is always the storyline of a franchise.
Well, you hope.
That's what the game has become.
Right, but you know, it's either the storyline because of how good he is or because you're still
how
looking
bad
for
he
one.
Is.
Right. It's
what's the storyline in Washington right now?
Exactly. It's the revolving door. They don't have a quarterback. It's the same thing in Houston and
I loved
and other
did
places.
You happen to see Jay Gruden's press conference yesterday?
I didn't see it, no.
He goes, well, you know, we feel really good about three guys. And I know that people will say that, you know, when you have three, it means you don't have one. He goes, I disagree with that. We feel like we've got three really good ones. I'm going, Jay.
There's no way they can keep him, is there? Because if he gets hurt this year, his $16 million next year gets fully guaranteed. They're only paying him like $3 or $4 million this year. They could afford to pay him this year very easily, especially because Cousins and McCoy are not making very much. But why even risk that he trips over
why did they pick up the option in practice?
Because they, I don't know, because, I mean, what, to give themselves, I guess.
That was a mistake.
Well, maybe they pick up the option, though, Jeff, and they say, you know what, let's pick it up. And that way, if he lights it up in the preseason, we've got him under team control. And if he doesn't, we let him go. Right? I mean,
but here's the thing. If you went by picking up the option, now you're forced to make a decision now to some extent. Because if you still, so in other words,
I see what you're saying. If you didn't pick up the option, you could let him play out on the last year of his deal and, If he stinks, then big deal, you cut him anyway.
Yeah, and if he's good, you're going to pay him anyway. So what's the problem?
I guess it was just a matter of they didn't want to get it to a point where they had to franchise him or, you know.
Yeah, but you know, that's a good problem to have. If you're not sure, that's a better problem to have when you say, oh, man, he's back to playing like he was as a rookie and we really think he's developed. That's a problem you want to have.
Do you think he's ever a successful starting quarterback in the National Football League?
I don't want to put anything that's right now. He's showing no signs of being a franchise quarterback. Lack of pocket presence, lack of anticipation, lack of ability to read defenses and anticipate throws. He's a mess.
How much do you weigh the factor people say, you know, lack of leadership? He's not accountable.
That's number one.
He points fingers.
That's number one. He points fingers, talks about himself a lot. And in the locker room, that doesn't fly. It doesn't fly at all. That's why when the reports came out last week that, you know, the offensive linemen are, you know, don't really like RG3, mm-hmm. Well, it's understandable. I mean, when the quarterback doesn't have your back, I mean, look.
Right. When he goes out there and says, hey, look, how did you expect me to perform well? I didn't have any time in the pocket.
Right.
And those kind of things. That's not a direct quote, but you
compare that to Blake Bortles, who when he had opportunities to, like last year, did you ever see Blake Bortles complain about protection? No. He's like, my decision making process has to be faster. I have to be able to get rid of the ball.
Even when it's not your fault, you got to make it your fault, right?
You have to own it.
Yeah. A couple of quick notes here for you. Neil Sterling and James Sample will both make their preseason debuts on Thursday night.
Yeah, and Neil Sterling, big deal. I mean, for me, that's a young man that needs to go on practice squad, make the positional change, and go to tight end. I don't think that he's going to have the ability to compete at the wide receiver position going forward. Now, James Sample, I'm excited to see. I want to see him play. I think that at some point he's going to be able to take over that safety position because I think he's a very good open field tackler. He's got ball skills on a defense that has great need for players with ball skills after having 6 interceptions all of last year.
Let's do this. We'll come back. We'll open the phone lines back up. Folks want to get in at 641-1010. Let's look at the offensive line. Let's get the latest position by position across that offensive line, what you've seen here, and how ready are these guys to start the NFL season coming up in less than 2 weeks right now. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman here with you. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, just like most people, I had the Jags between, you know, 5 and 7 wins, you know. And after seeing Blake Bortles, I think worst-case scenario, we win the Super Bowl by 30 points.
Yes, optimism was running high on the scoreboard show the other night, Jeff.
That's great.
You know what? I mean, you see it when you see him out there and playing as well as he was playing in the midst of it. You squint your eyes a little bit and say, hey, you know what? We get a quarterback who ends up as a top 10 guy in the league somewhere down the line in the near future. You got a chance every single year.
Every year.
Every year. You can switch everything else. You can have issues here. You can have issues there. You can have a leaky offensive line. Those guys have a way of managing that, either through getting rid of the ball quickly, knowing where it's coming, reading the defense pre-snap, pocket presence, as you talked about, mobility, which he's got as well, the kind of the sixth sense to know when it's time mm-hmm. to go. He's got a little bit of all of that. He's showing a little bit of all that right now. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves.
No, you don't. But, you know, I think his development and his progress also makes you keep a guy like Brian Walters. And the reason I say that is that the quarterback is going to make throws to move the chains. Now you just need to make sure that you have guys that can make the catch to move the chains. You know, so there's a great debate kind of going on at that wide receiver position, and Brian Walters really had a nice game last Friday night. And
the week before as well.
And I had a good one the week before where he made some head catches to where he was taking hits right when he was making the catch. I mean, right now, give me those type of guys with a quarterback that's showing that he's going to be able to play at a high level at times, because if you have people that can catch his balls, you're going to be good.
He'll get you the football, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, and he's making some of those throws.
Why would you not want to keep Brian Walters?
Well, right now I think they are. You know, barring something crazy happening.
We had this conversation last week, didn't we, about the wide receiver position, and we were saying, okay, you know, what are you looking at in that fifth wide receiver position? We were talking about Tanner Doss and Washington and Brian Walters, and everybody was kind of, you know, on the Washington thing, and everybody's kind of on Aurelius Ben before that. I was like, whoa, slow down. I said TBD, to be determined, because I knew from watching Brian Walters in training camp, incredibly consistent, runs good routes, and the quarterbacks have confidence in him. And that says a lot about a guy's ability to make a team, is that where's the quarterback looking when he's in crunch time? And Brian Walters is a guy that they have a lot of confidence in, and rightly so.
Oh, yeah. Like you said, he catches everything pretty much thrown his way.
I don't care about anybody else's speed. I don't care about anybody else's deep ball ability. I don't care about anybody's yards after catch ability. Give me a guy that's going to catch the ball and be where he's supposed to be so the quarterback has confidence in him, and that's Brian Walters.
Texter on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line says, I always get the impression I'm listening to an expert when Logs is on the air. That's the point.
I'm glad I'm giving you that impression.
He's worked hard to create that impression, but that is why we have him here on Tuesdays. Here was Blake asked yesterday about what he's seen out of this offensive line group.
Yeah, they've been unbelievable. You know, I think the addition of Wiz and Jeremy Parnell, you know, Joku's a year older. Brandon Linder's been awesome, and Zane Beatles as well. You know, it's a good group. They work well together. It's a really intelligent group, and it's been fun to play behind them. You know, there's a good pocket every play. They've been, you know, aggressive and attacking the run and creating running lanes like that.
Hey, you know, let me make a comment, because Blake says an incredibly intelligent group. Was also at that, not too long after Blake had his press conference, Brian Sexton sat down with Tyler Shatley for a few good minutes. And Tyler Shatley is an engineer, graduate from Clemson University. And then there's one other offensive lineman in that group, and I want to say it's maybe with Beatles. He's also an engineer. So when he says it's a very intelligent group, he's not lying.
Right, he means it. Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Academically, these guys are pretty smart.
Now, football-wise, let's not worry about the smart so much, although that's a factor. Let's just talk about the results from what you've seen throughout the preseason, from where it started to where it is now. Let's start as we did the last time we had you in on the right side. Parnell, no question.
Oh,
right?
Man, he's great. I mean, excellent feet. He's got a really nice punch. And in the offseason, the offensive line actually spent some time working with Tunch Ilkin, the former right tackle of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who has a video out called Tunch's Punches for those that maybe want to find it online, if it's even available online. And Tunch came in and worked with these guys, and you can see that Parnell is actually using a lot of Tunch's teachings as far as knocking hands down, punching to gain separation. He's made great progress throughout training camp. He is actually looking much better now than when I saw him playing for the Dallas Cowboys last year. He's a guy that extremely hard worker, worked incredibly hard in the offseason in the weight room, but also watching him on the practice field, the guy never wastes a snap in practice. He always is looking to work on stuff every single drill, and I love watching him.
Brandon Linder.
Stud, great hands. He plays the game so strong because his hands are probably the best out of any of them. His hands are always inside. He doesn't have great feet, but he has great hands, and it makes him a dominant player.
Toe injury, just minor,
yeah,
and not a concern.
Well, I hope, you know.
From what we know.
Yeah, from what we know, it's not a major concern. And Brandon last year played with some things that he was able to play through, so you know he's going to be able to fight through it if it's not completely healthy.
All right, Stefan Wisniewski.
Going back to last week's comments, a little stronger than Bowanko, more experience, you know, the need for stability along the offensive line, the ability or the need to win now, you know, kind of gave him the leg up. But Bowanko, I thought, played pretty well last week. But you could just see that Wisniewski played a little bit better in the Giants game, earned the job, and congratulations to him. And I think having veteran experience where at that position also helps calm the quarterback a little bit. And so I think that was the right decision.
Pretty happy about that group of three right there.
Yeah, I like it.
Right. All right, so now Zane Beatles.
You know, the first two games I thought he was really good. And then this past game he wasn't so good. You know, so I want to see more of what I saw the first 2 weeks as opposed to what I saw last week. you know, hopefully he can get back and find out. Because, you know, I think Zane felt a little bit of pressure in the preseason. You know, once they got to the games, you know, the conversation that people were having about Zane needs to be a starter, which he did. If he was not the starter, he was not going to be on this roster. He elevated his level of play this past week. I thought he got sloppy. I thought he played high. I thought it was a poor performance by him.
Okay. And Luke Jokel.
You know, everybody really focused in on the one play in which CBS put the ISO camera on him. And it did not look pretty. I totally agree. I actually talked about this last night on All Access with the film room. And I wasn't upset with the play, you know, because the biggest reason is that he never ducked his head. He never leaned. He never tried to anticipate the power. He knew it was coming, and he prepared for it, but he didn't overreact to it. And at least he got run over to slow the guy down before he hit the quarterback. So good. But what I wanted to see was what happened after. Okay, would he revert to some of the bad habits to where he was lunging and leaning and then get, you know, the old whiff where he doesn't get any of the guy?
Right.
And the very next rush against Phillip Hunt, which was the guy that embarrassed him, the very next time he had him and Phillip Hunt went right back to the bull rush, Luke never overreacted. He still kept his head up, his body upright. His hand got a little bit better on the second time because the first time when he got embarrassed, his hand was actually outside of Phillip Hunt's and he had no power, no leverage, and that's why he ended up on his rear end. And then later in the game, when he went against Jones, and I think it was James Jones or Jason Jones, the defensive end, Jason Jones is a better pass rusher than Phillip Hunt, and he got his hands inside, he was upright, and he actually stoned Jones. And so, I was so happy to see the play after he got embarrassed. To me, that was all I needed to know and all I needed to see because he got better throughout the game. The one play that I didn't like was early in the game where he leaned a little bit and gave up a soft edge, and then the defender got his arm on Blake Bortles as the ball was being thrown. I thought he had a little bit of lazy feet on that one. But the bull rush and the ones after that, I was actually excited and pleased to see his reaction to that. Now, and the other thing I want to say is that for CBS to show three bad plays from the year before about Luke Jokel.
Plus one from this preseason.
I mean, look, you had like an inventory of 800 and something snaps. You could have taken Tony Boselli and pulled three plays out of a season and found three bad snaps.
Sure, but I don't think they were limited to three bad snaps.
No, it wasn't limited to three, but I just thought there was. Now, it made CBS look like geniuses because they show the clips, and all of a sudden, then, a few plays later, the play happens.
And that's, I think, why, because, it has been a story. Whether it's an overblown story or not, it's been a topic of discussion. I think that's what they were highlighting.
And it's rightly so a topic of discussion because he's a very high pick, which is not Luke Jokel's doing.
I understand.
You know, but at the same token, I think people also need to slow down a little bit and look at the progress that he's making. First of all, Luke Jokel is an exceptional run blocker. He's doing an excellent job in the run game. He just needs to clean some things up in the pass protection, and you can start to see signs that he's doing that. The hands are getting better. The one thing I want to see him do more of that Parnell does an excellent job of is that when he gets a defender and the defender starts to shorten the angle on the corner, is that Parnell actually punches and gains separation while keeping his feet moving. And Jokel doesn't do that. He a lot of times wants to absorb things. And there's nothing wrong with the guys that absorb it because Joe Thomas is one of the best at it. But he's got too good of feet and too good of punch to not use it in his arsenal because he doesn't have incredible natural strength like a Joe Thomas. Joe Thomas can have, you know, a 300-pound guy get a 10-yard start and run into him full speed, and Joe Thomas is not going to get knocked back. He just has that ability. You know, so, but I want to see him take that next step. Using his arm, punch, gain separation, and continue to keep his head up, which to me, we saw that after he got embarrassed. He actually had his head up when he got embarrassed. So to me, that was okay. Good sign of progress for Luke Jokel.
One thing I talked with Dave Caldwell about that, and I asked him specifically about Luke, and he said, look, he goes, we're not complaining about it because we understand the nature of the position, but much of what you're saying, he goes, you know, he could play well on 69 snaps, mess up on a couple, and that's what's going to be focused on. And that is the nature of the left tackle position when you give up some big plays. But he said overall he's very happy, and he's just, you know, the way he's evaluating it too. Obviously, you look at him individually, but as a unit, what they've been able to do, he said, I think it's one sack against first teamers, right, in three games. You compare that to what they gave up last year, and you know, a lot of that has to do with Bortles helping him out with the pocket savvy and all that. But overall, right now, we're just that jailbreak that we got used
not
to
happening.
Seeing last year hasn't happened well, throughout the preseason.
And I think a lot, some of that has to do with scheme. But watching the offensive line work together and pass off games and stunts right now, they're doing a great job at it. The awareness is so much better with the offensive line. I think that's coaching. I think that's scheme. I think that's also experience that they've gained. And it's also the improved players that you have that were competing for competing for jobs, which, you know, at the center position. And then you bring in a really good football player and Jeremy Parnell at the right tackle position. So it's a combination of everything to why they are playing better.
All right. I got a couple of quick ones here on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. One says Zane Beatles has a mechanical engineering degree from Utah. And the second one from Wally said, screw football, he just wants to go hunting with Jeff Lockman. So there you have it.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
getting folks fired up on the first day of dove season.
And let me just also talk about Tyler Shatley here, who, you know, I've been, you know, singing praises about Tyler Shatley since the very beginning. This young man is getting better and better. Well, he played over 70 snaps this past week. And here's the thing, against the Giants, he had to play guard, which he'd had no snaps at guard in all preseason. All he was doing was pretty much working exclusively with the number three at center. Stepped into that game and did a nice job. Wasn't perfect. I thought he even got better this past game. Tyler Shatley is a very strong human being. Very strong human being. And I think he has now put his foot into the door for that sixth spot. So on game day, when the coaches have to decide, are we going to have Luke Bowanko or are we going to have Tyler Shatley? Tyler Shatley is making a case for him to actually be that sixth guy. And then the seventh is going to have to be somebody that plays tackle. And right now it's Sam Young.
Sam Young versus Pastor for the last
Sam Young.
Spot. But that is the competition, right?
Yes.
Right. Down to the nitty gritty on the offensive line spot. 6-4-1-10-10. Final chance to get in with Jeff Lockman coming up here on Jaguars today. We'll also look at the fan feedback spotlight where we asked you today, now with Josh Scobie gone, which veteran do you think could be the biggest surprise cut at the deadline? Jags have to go from 75 to 53 at the end of the week after the final preseason game against Washington on Thursday night. Jaguars today on this Tuesday brought to you by Kenny Wayne Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Back with more live at Everbank in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Lagerman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
They give it to TJ. Yeldon dives. He didn't get there that time either. He was. Is the ball on the ground? Is the ball? The Lions are pointing. Now the Lions are pointing that it's their ball. There's no signal from the officials.
Touchdown.
Now Ed Hockley says touchdown.
Obviously the goal line play. Would you do it again that way?
I mean, I would, but, you know, I'll probably stay on my feet a lot. So, you know, I probably won't be jumping anytime soon.
I think TJ Yeldon's still waiting to break the plane to the goal line on his first NFL touchdown myself. That was a generous spotting there, and maybe just not enough to overturn it on replay as far as that went. But what do you make of what you saw? We just saw the one game out of TJ Yeldon. Obviously not a ton of holes, but what did you see on tape?
Just okay, but you know, I want to see him get some room. You know, the offensive line, first of all, I said it before the game, a great test for the Jaguars offensive line because Detroit has a very good defensive front, excellent against the run, and TJ didn't have a whole lot of room. But, you know, I'm hoping he plays this week. I know there's a lot of guys that probably will be put on the shelf, but I think I feel that he's a guy that needs the reps.
Get a little rhythm going.
To find a little bit of rhythm, to gain a little confidence. And I don't care if he's playing behind a second-team offensive line. He's a rookie that has 8 carries in the preseason. That's it. And he's kind of anointed the starter. For me, I would have Denard Robinson as my starter and Toby Gerhart as the backup and allow TJ to earn his way into the lineup.
Don't think that's going to happen though, do you?
I don't know. I mean, maybe not from some of the conversation from, you know, from Gus and Dave and, you know, that, you know, he's on top of the depth chart, you know, and I understand that he's practicing very well, but, you know, there's a part of the evaluation that hasn't occurred yet. And I think that, and I'm a big believer in that, you know, you need to send a message to the team and that the team is always has to know that guys have to show it to earn it, and he hasn't showed it yet.
All right, let's get to some of the reaction today, the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Today, Jeff asking folks, now with Scobie gone, and certainly he was a candidate to get cut if he wasn't traded, who will be potentially the biggest surprise training camp cut among the veterans? Here are some of the reaction we got, and then I'll let you weigh in after I read some of these names. MC Wally said Pozluzny.
No way.
Yeah, Jeremy, I said I'll wait to the end and get your reaction. But all right, let's do it. Let's do it this way because this will be more fun. I agree with you. Absolutely no way. He's your starting middle linebacker. It's not even a question.
Captain of the defense, man.
Not getting cut. Now, here's one for you. Jeremy Smith says, would it be a surprise if Ziggy Hood is cut? I don't see any upside to him holding a roster spot. What do you think?
I think that's possible because you have a sixth-round pick in Michael Bennett who has shown some things, but you know, Ziggy Hood's about the same type of player, you know, and now you've got a younger guy who, you know, you're looking at equal things here. You know, we go back to the conversation about, you know, Bowanko and Wisniewski. You know, who's got the higher ceiling here?
Right.
You know, and Ziggy Hood, you know, the interesting part with me is that with all the conversation about who's going to play the three technique until Cindric Marks is back, Ziggy's never really been in the recent conversation. So, I mean, that's a possibility.
All right, moving along. Now, I'm not sure about some of these if people really understood the question, but Matt Hoffman said originally it would have been Branch, but the injury changes that. I'll say Clay Harbor. I don't know, you know.
No.
Right, like what are you watching? Clay Harbor right now, especially with Julius Thomas
Clay,
hurt.
Clay Harbor has major value.
He is going to be a big part of this
big
passing
part.
Game.
I mean, with a tight end-centric offense that they're going to have, you know, the ability to play three tight ends at the same time. Sometimes you could even line up with four tight ends on the field if you wanted to. Clay Harbor's a good football player. He is a very willing, nasty blocker. He's not a dominant blocker like Mercedes and Nick Jacobs can be. But from that move tight end position, he gives you everything you want.
Here's one from Eric Harris. I would have said Clemens earlier, but injuries make him stay. And you would agree with that, right? Chris Clemens is on the
He's on the roster. You know, if Dante Fowler is healthy and Andre Branch is, you know, has a good camp and then has good showings in the preseason games
maybe not,
so far, then
right.
Maybe that would have been in the conversation. But right now, he's not going anywhere.
And let's see, this one from Eric. It goes on to say he'll say Bernard Pierce instead. He doesn't see a role for Bernard Pierce.
Well, I do. I see a role for him because he can play special teams. He's a dependable veteran at a position to where you've got some relative unknowns, you know, in Denard Robinson and T.J. Yeldon. You know, could they end up letting him go? Yeah. Is it likely? No.
Isaiah went with Josh Evans. I don't think it'd be
I think Josh is gonna be one of the guys.
That's gone.
Yeah, that's gone.
How did Loston play the
okay,
other night?
You know, okay, but you know, watching them, you really got to focus in and two on special teams. And Loston's a better special teams player. He has gotten a lot better from year one to year two. Josh Evans has kind of stayed the same. I mean, he got better for a little while, and then he's kind of plateaued out. I just think Loston gives you more.
What's up with the tackling the other night? Was it as bad on tape? Was watching it just live as you guys were calling the game?
It wasn't so much the tackling as it was that some of the angles weren't great.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, and then that's the number one thing typically that makes tackling look poor is angles. You know, but it wasn't as bad as probably as what we thought.
Okay.
Watching the film.
How would you take on Zach Zenner in the open field?
I'm telling you now, I'd take that guy on my football team in a minute.
You'd have to chop him down at the knees, wouldn't you? I mean,
how strong did he look?
You couldn't hit him in the chest.
South Dakota State.
You hit
did
him in the
anybody
chest.
Anybody tackle
going 4
him?
4 yards the other way. No, his number. Have you ever seen his numbers
no.
in college? I'll dig him up here in a second for you. Unbelievable numbers that this guy put up in college, but very impressed with him. You were right.
I'd take him on this football team. You could take him on this football team right now, and he would be in the rotation.
I'll dig these up here just for you,
especially with the gap offense that they're going to be running more of this year, like some of the runs that they have for Toby and for TJ. I mean, that's right up Zach Zenner's alley.
Well, here you go. In 2012, his first year as a starter, okay, he ran for 2,044 yards.
I just want to tell people, Zach Zenner was the running back for the Detroit Lions this past Friday
night. Yeah, the guy who was, right, the
number
guy who
41.
Could be tackled, big guy. Ran for 2,044 yards averaging 6.8 a carry.
Wow.
Really fell off the next year. It was down to 2015 yards and at 5.7 yards a clip. 23 touchdowns, up from 13. And then his last year, he ran for 2019 yards, 6 yards a clip, 22 touchdowns. Also caught 28 passes out of the backfield, scored another 4 that way. Look, if you're going to play at that level, you dominate it, right? That's what gets you on the radar, and it's exactly what he's done. And looks like he's got some chops as well. Let me get a couple here from the Facebook page. I had a couple of people suggest that Marquise Lee, because the Jags will be so frustrated with it. It's like, you can't, don't be that short-sighted, people. He gives them an element that they don't possess with many guys, with that speed and quickness and potential playmaking ability. There's no question he's locked onto this roster. I understand everyone's frustration with not seeing him, and now the albino tiger cut is going to follow him around all season, I have a feeling.
Yeah, you know what? And that may not be such a bad thing, you know, as far as maybe providing a little extra motivation. But look, I mean, I think he's just been incredibly unfortunate with the injuries. It's not like he's not a guy that's doesn't have toughness and can't fight through things. I mean, these are legitimate injuries that he's got, you know, but he's got tremendous potential, you know, and when you have tremendous potential, the scholarship will run for a full 4 years.
Right.
Okay. And then after that time, then you get to the point where, okay, patience can wear out. But we're not at that point yet.
Right. I mean, for instance, in Denver,
it's year two.
You're seeing Monty Ball in Denver going into his third training camp. Now they're saying, as a second-round pick, saying, you know what? He may not be on this roster when it's all said and done. But even he, who's done nothing, got 2 full years. And even that would be surprising still to me to some degree if they let him go. Marquise Lee, there's no question he's on this roster. And like you said, the scholarship will continue.
Oh.
And hopefully he earns that full scholarship.
Just turn the film on. When you watch him when he is playing, he's the fastest guy on the field. He's the most explosive weapon that the Jaguars have. So he's not going anywhere.
All right, as we wrap up here, you think that it's going to be – you hope to see some work out of Yeldon on Thursday night. Give us 2 or 3 – positions or players you'll be watching to see if they're forcing their way onto the 53.
You know what? I don't think there's a whole lot really to look at.
You think Walter's pretty safe at number 5 there?
Yeah, but he's going to play a lot in this game, you know, just because, I mean, it's a numbers thing. I mean,
right.
You only got 75 guys. Somebody's got to play.
Right.
You know, but I want to see him to really close the door on the conversation and say, I'm the guy.
Blake Bortles need to be out there anything. For any?
I don't want to see him for one snap.
Thank you.
I don't want to see any starter at all.
With the exception of Yeldon, if you consider him.
If he's considered a starter. But in my book, I wouldn't have him as a starter yet.
Right.
You know, he would have to do something in a game to be able to legitimize, okay, he's going to be our guy. But the rest of them, no, I don't want to see anybody. I don't want to see Aaron Colvin. I don't want to see Tyson Alualu. I don't want to see Jared Odrick. I don't want to see any of those guys. I mean, this last game, you know, and it is unfortunate to some extent that it is such a wasteful game because it's not even worth watching. Trust me, it's not worth calling sometimes. But there sometimes you do have evaluations that are worth having in the fourth game. I think this team and this roster is pretty well set.
All right. Well, Logs, it's always worth listening to when you're in on Tuesdays. We appreciate it once again. And I would say the biggest thing to listen for really is that 2 hours of post game on Thursday night. That's worth
absolutely
listening for, right? And calling in
because
on
it's over
as well. Yes, it is. Logs, we'll see you next Tuesday, buddy. Thank you, man. There he goes, Jeff Logman here with us. That does it for us for Jaguars today, this morning. And once again, we thank Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, our Tuesday sponsor here on the program. Fat Tony, a couple days away from coming back. Johnny O will be in studio with me tomorrow. For Jeff Logman, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Signing off for Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.